Welcome, everyone, to episode 144 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about two very tied conference finals series. Both series are knotted at two games apiece, so we're going to recap what happened in games three and four and give some updated predictions on what we expect to happen, hopefully, in games five, six, and seven. Before we get underway, I wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter, at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Well, it's going better than the NFL, Brian.
Yeah, man. I have not been online all day. I just got home from a run, so I'm just catching up on this now. But, my God. Kudos to the NFL for it's like they couldn't have handled this national anthem thing any worse the entire time, and then they keep hitting new lows. It's really a good analogy for the Trump administration too.
It is. They just go hand in hand. It's amazing.
Yeah. Anytime you hand Donald Trump a W, that's the biggest L you've ever taken. So shouts to the NFL for continuing to set a new low. Luckily, Mort, the NBA is setting a new high. I mean, it looked a couple days ago, you know, it looked like we were headed toward blowout city in both of these series. Boston was up 2-0. The Warriors, you know, take a commanding 2-1 lead. Everyone's writing the Rockets off, saying they're dead in the water. You know, fast forward to Wednesday, we're tied at two games apiece in each series, going back to Boston for Game 5 Wednesday night, Houston for Game 5 Thursday night. So since the Eastern Conference renews first, or you know, the game five is earlier, we're going to start with them, then we'll move to the West. So more, you know, we when Boston was up 2-0, we said, you know, they're going back to Cleveland. The big hope, if you're a Cavs fan, is like maybe our supporting cast isn't going to be such a tire fire that it was on the road. Lo and behold, game three, they wake up, win by 30 points. J.R. Smith starts hitting shots. George Hill take some more offensive responsibility off of LeBron James. I mean, in game three, LeBron James only had 12 field goal attempts, which is huge. Just a nice, well-rounded effort. Six Cavs in double figures. So they win by 30 there. And then game four, I mean, man, it was the LeBron James show. But again, you got, you know, 13 points from Tristan Thompson, 13 from George Hill. Kevin Love actually had a pretty bad game, all things considered. But J.R. Smith again came through with three threes. So now we're headed back to Boston, two games apiece. What did you see in games three and four that give you hope if you're a Cavs fan moving forward in this series?
Improved Cavaliers defense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, big time. And who would have thought they had it, given how crappy they've looked over the last couple of years, really? I mean, they just became cohesive. Kyle Korver suddenly became a shot blocker out of nowhere, which was fun. No, it seemed like they play with, I guess, a sense of desperation, and yet that's actually not giving them fair credit because they were also disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just improved. They just came out and swung from the fences and had a tremendous defensive effort in two games. And combine that with the fact that Boston just hasn't been able to get their offense going on their own terms.
Mm-hmm.
It just led to two victories, and rightly so. I mean, Boston didn't play well enough to get enough separation, and Cleveland took advantage, and that's all she wrote for those two games.
Yeah. I mean, I think game three, LeBron really led the way with the defensive effort. He set the tone early, and I think, you know, the fact that his supporting cast stepped up, that George Hill took some more of the point guard responsibilities, you know, LeBron didn't have to carry as much of a load on offense so he could preserve more of his energy for defense. And I think that really set the tone for the rest of the team. But as you said, Kyle Korver shot blocker was not something I expected to see in this series. Also, where was Larry Nance in the first two games, Ty Lue? Like, he played 15 total minutes in the first two games, and then in games three and four had a pretty big impact off the bench. So,
yep. You
know, I think what we've seen, or what it seems like is happening, is Ty Lue is finally starting to move basically to an eight-man rotation. He realizes Rodney Hood is just a garbage pile at this point. Not to say that he's, like, ruin forever, but for whatever reason, he just has been terrible throughout the entire playoffs, so he got a DNP in game four. You know, Jordan Clarkson only played 4 minutes in game four. Again, you know, not to say I'm writing Jordan Clarkson off completely as an NBA player, but defensively in this series, they every time he's on the floor, Boston just goes right at him, which we mentioned, you know, in our after games one and two. And Boston,
and these were major acquisitions at the deadline.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
I mean, you had to know, like, neither Clarkson never came with the reputation as a good defender. Hood, like, you see his body and you think he would be, but he's never been, like, an all-world defender by any means. And I think, you know, the fact that they are these trade deadline acquisitions, they're getting used to a new system, they're not playing all that much, they don't have that many practices, they're still both young players, like, they just might not be ready for this moment. You know, give them a full offseason, and we'll see next year. Maybe they'll be better acclimated, depending on what happens with LeBron James. But I just think, you know, right now, Ty Lue is realizing, like, I need to stick with the core four who have been here the whole time with, you know, LeBron, Tristan, Kevin Love, J.R. Smith. Kyle Korver is a playoff-tested battle-tested playoff veteran. George Hill, at least, has been through the ringer with, you know, playoff experience as well. And then, again, Jeff Green, like, he has not been good, but at least he's a veteran. You know what you're getting out of him. And then, yeah, like, Nance really...
Is that the worst compliment ever? He's not good, but he's a veteran.
Yeah, I mean, probably, but, like, you know, at least he's a 6'8", 6'9", wing versus, like, Jordan Clarkson, who is a 6'4", walking layup line.
Okay, so he's tall.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff Green, the best compliment I can pay you is you're tall.
Against old. Boston, that's got a bunch of these interchangeable wings and forwards, like, that's what you need. You need 6'9", guys. Jordan Clarkson is just a liability. Yeah. I mean, also, I thought in game three, Tatum got pulled. I think he got pulled, like, really early. I don't remember if he got, was it Tatum or Brown? One of them picked up two fouls early, but I think Brown picked up the two fouls early, and I think Tatum, I want to say, got pulled within the first couple minutes, and it just seemed to throw off the rotation and, like, the substitution pattern for the rest of the game. Like, we saw 11 minutes of Yabusele, which I did not at all expect to see in this series. So that's, you know, that's something to watch moving forward is, like, look, Boston, you know, because of all their injuries, they are really thin right now. Like, it's realistically, it's a 7-man rotation. You're going to get a little bit of Semi Ojeleye every game, but it's like they're 5 starters, Marcus Smart and Aaron Baines. So if a guy like Tatum or Brown gets into foul trouble, Brown's gotten 5 fouls in each of the last 2 games. You know, that's a storyline to watch moving forward.
Yeah.
Marcus Morris, the self-proclaimed best LeBron defender, not named Kawhi Leonard, said he defended LeBron like shit in game three. I don't want to pin it entirely on him. I think the thing that I noticed, at least especially in game four, it seems like LeBron has just figured out their switching patterns and, like, how to get Terry Rozier on him. And then when Terry Rozier is on him, he just goes into full Terminator mode, which makes me so happy. Like, nothing brings me more joy than seeing LeBron just destroy Terry Rozier. So that's something that Brad Stevens needs to figure out, because in the closing minutes of game four, Rozier was not on the floor. He had Marcus Smart in as his starting point guard.
Which is just not fantastic by any stretch of the imagination, because Smart has been horrific offensively.
Right.
Like, defensively, he's been the good old traditional Marcus Smart, but, I mean, let me just look up the numbers here. Yeah, so Smart is shooting 11 of 38 from the field in 4 games, including 3 of 17 from downtown, and he leads the team in turnovers. So that's not great.
Yep.
And when he's one of your, like you just said, like, he, Brad Stevens is having, like, a 7-8 man rotation, so when one of your guys are putting up that kind of offensive stats, you're playing at a disadvantage. That's just a problem. And when Semi Ojeleye, who's averaging almost 14 minutes per game this series, is shooting 27% from the field and averaging just 2.5 points, that's additionally hard. Like, I think Greg Monroe is a problem to have on the court because he can't really guard in space.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be inclined to give him more minutes just because he will at least put up some points.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Celtics just need it. Maybe not at home, but when the series returns to Cleveland, because they have trouble on the road. I mean, they just cannot get their shit together. I mean, let's just be honest. Also, side note, I realized the game was lost in game three, but having Jaylen Brown and Ojale play basically the same amount of minutes in a playoff game should always be a no-go. Like, that's that's not great. Yeah. Like that's a problem. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to the game in Boston just because I think we'll see two teams playing a little bit more equally because, you know, for some reason Boston just checks out mentally on the road. Mm-hmm. Like, they did catch up a little bit in game four and they were within striking distance.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about you, but I never felt the game was out of Cleveland's hands at any point. Like, it was just a matter of flipping on a switch. When I was watching the game, at no point did I go, oh yeah, the Boston's coming back from this one. They're gonna get it. No, I mean, I was like, yeah, they're gonna come close. LeBron's gonna go all nuclear, and then that's it.
Yeah, they like hovered in that like 8 to 12 points behind for a long time, and it was like, oh, if Cleveland goes dry for like 2 minutes, this is a game again. But you're right, like Cleveland did manage to come up with big shots time and again to, you know, stave off any sustained run. And Ty Lue was really smart with his timeouts, I thought, in the fourth quarter especially. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember there was one run that cut it to 10, I think, and he immediately called timeout. Like, he just had no tolerance for, like, you know, we're not taking chances here. We're not letting them get any momentum. We're just going to stop it, call a timeout. Let's chart up a play. Let's get back up to 12 or 13. Like, let's not give them any hope in this game.
Right, and his substitution pattern. I mean, look, taking Tristan out as soon as Al Horford goes out like, to give him a blow is just great because Tristan has played Horford fantastically this entire series, honestly. He's just his activity level, his long arms, the fact that he's such a nuisance, and only on few occasions has Al really gotten the best of him. Where he's just like made one hell of a strong post move and finished on the other side of the rim.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's just been this second jump, the third jump, just the activity level of Thompson, where Horford is just being, I don't want to say nullified because that's harsh, but damn close too. Like, it's, you can't really,
That's fair. Like, he had 7 points in game three on 2 of 4 shooting.
Right.
I would say that's nullified. He was better in game four, but.
You know,
after game three, they were like, we can't have another game where Al Horford only gets 4 shots.
Yeah, but here's the problem in game four. And Jeff Van Gundy actually talked about this as well. Like, Al started shooting threes off screens, like coming off screens and started shooting threes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not him. That's not his game. Like, he is a very, he's very much isolated to being like a spot up shooter in a standstill position. Like, he's not a guy who'll run off back screens like he's Klay Thompson.
Right.
And I think I counted 2 of those attempts where he just went, what?
Yeah.
No, that's a bad shot. And you don't really associate Boston, and in particular Al Horford, with a bad shot selection.
Right.
So I'm hoping that Brad Stevens, you know, cleans that up for tonight.
Yeah, it brought me a lot of joy because their shot selection was so good throughout most of that Sixers series, and the Sixers shot selection was so bad that it felt good to see the tables turn because Boston fans were just so goddamn salty throughout like all of game four. It brought me a lot of joy because I'm still healing from what they did to us.
I can tell, here we are talking about Al Horford spotting up and you somehow managed to turn it into our Sixers thing. I can sense your pain, Brian.
Yeah, well, I just thought of Marco Bellinelli. He was taking some Marco Bellinelli shots. And
he was.
Like
he
Marco was. Bellinelli, they were nowhere close to going in. But
it was bad. It was weird. Like, did you ever think Horford would take those kind of shots?
No, you're totally right. Like, he is the guy who stands above the break. And, you know, he can hit those catch-and-shoot threes when a defense breaks down, like, and they just don't rotate to him and he's wide open. And when he catches those, you're like, oh shit, he's going to hit it. And he usually does. But yeah, I mean, he should not. He's not Kyle Korver. He's not J.J. Redick. He's not Klay Thompson. He, like, don't take those shots. I think I have a feeling going into game five, that's going to be Brad Stevens' main message is like, look, guys, we prove we can win at home. All we have to do is hold home court or hold serve at home for the rest of the series, and we're going to the finals. Just play disciplined basketball. Like, that's what got us here. You know, that's really what was the biggest difference between us and Milwaukee in the first round, us and Philly in the second round, us against Cleveland in these first two games. We were the more disciplined team. And in games 3 and 4, as you said, for whatever reason, Boston's home road splits throughout the playoffs have been outrageous. They're now 9-0 in home, I believe 1-6 on the road. So, you know, Cleveland has to go in and be the first team to beat them at home in the playoffs, which is... They have a LeBron James. I'm not going to count him out from that. But, you know, as James proved in game two, he can have, like, a meteoric game. But if the rest of the supporting cast doesn't show up, it doesn't matter. So, you know, it's the whole thing of supporting cast tends to play better on the road or on at home, worse on the road. You've got some inconsistent guys in Cleveland, notably J.R. Smith. I think the Tristan Thompson thing is going to be... You know, that might be the X factor of this whole series. If he continues to battle Al Horford to a standstill, that's going to be huge. Because, you know, in the second half of game four, they come out. Al Horford got onto Kevin Love a couple times early in the half and just destroy him every time. So if they can continue working that matchup, getting Love switched on to Horford instead of Thompson, that's something that could, you know, they can keep... going to, I think, but at the other end, they really need to figure out this LeBron Terry Rozier situation. They need to, you know, it might be like what Houston started to do. Like, sometimes you don't switch, you know, you don't switch on every possession, because if you have Rozier on LeBron, it's over. Like, you need to,
right?
Whoever is on LeBron may just need to stick on LeBron no matter what. And if you want to switch with the other four guys, that's fine, but like. That may be an adjustment you need to make, because you cannot, under any circumstances, afford to have Rozier continue to switch on Braun.
Right, and when LeBron is the ball handler and he has George Hill screen for him, I would just go under the screen and stick with the matchup.
Yeah.
Like, let LeBron shoot. I mean, I know he's an improved shooter, but if he throws up 15 three-pointers, I'm going to live with that.
Yeah.
The problem is with LeBron as a screener, because... You know, he's a freight train.
right.
So, yeah.
Hey, everybody. This is Brian from the Glue Guys Nets show on Almighty Baller. Just wanted to talk to you about sponsor and friend of the network, HelloFresh. So I've had a few meal kit delivery services in my day. I, for one, am very excited to be having HelloFresh as a sponsor. So I am a kind of a deadbeat and a pretty disorganized person in my life. And one thing that I very much appreciate about HelloFresh's business was I had left town for a while they were delivering the package. And I came home 2 days later after it had been delivered and discovered that it was perfectly preserved. Nothing wrong. 2 days in a New York City, insanely hot October for some reason, and it was perfectly preserved. My produce was fine. My meats were fine. Everything was totally fine. Lots of ice packages all over the place, really closely wrapped. I very much appreciated the fact that I wasn't going to have to let my HelloFresh packages go to waste. That felt really good to me. Also, an important thing to note, while I am a deadbeat in some ways, I'm not in others. I do actually do a fair amount of cooking, and I really appreciate HelloFresh for this reason, too. Sometimes you get these, you know, delivery services, and you get all these kinds of off-brand things in the package. None of it's really what you're used to. I got King's Hawaiian Rolls with my burgers this time. Like, the brand, the actual thing. And it was such a breath of fresh air to see a brand that I was very familiar with, liked a lot, coming inside the package. And it made all the difference for my Juicy Lucy burgers that I whipped up. So all that's to say, HelloFresh is easily my favorite of the services. Tons of choices. You got classic style, family style, even vegetarian meals. Lots of benefits to subscribing. You can get delicious, filling meals delivered right to your door every week for less than $10 per serving and free shipping. So for a total of $60 off, that's $20 off your first three boxes, visit HelloFresh.com/Almighty60 and enter Almighty60. That's HelloFresh.com/Almighty60, Almighty60, 60, and enter Almighty60. It's like receiving six meals free or up to 50% off three boxes.
But can we just like take a moment and also go back and yell at Twitter after the first two games of this series? Because I saw a lot of takes about, oh, Boston doesn't need Kyrie Irving Gordon Hayward.
Right.
Like, they should see if they could dump them in the summer. Like, what? Right.
Yeah. That what? Was David Thorpe of ESPN had some... Yeah, and in his defense, I think he was saying, like, look, Boston's going to have some really hard choices coming up in the next couple of years in terms of salary cap. Like, you just cannot retain all of Horford, Kyrie, Gordon Hayward, right. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier. You just can't do it. Like, even unless this new sports gambling, like, creates an influx, like a salary cap spike even bigger than the one in 2016, it's just not going to happen. So I think he was saying, like, just see what the market is for a guy like Irving, who has 1 year left on his deal, has some bad right. knees, which I don't disagree with. I think Hayward, you're keeping no matter what. But Irving, it wouldn't totally shock me if they at least explored his market this summer. But yes, like they are a better team with two additional All-Stars. Right.
But even if they moved Kyrie, like it was more the hot takes from everyone else saying just get them off the books. Yeah. Because here what you're proposing is a trade where you get something in return for Kyrie, maybe right. not equal value, but you right, get something right. else, like you get more depth.
Yeah.
And what I'm arguing here is look at this squad right now. When Marcus Smart is averaging nearly 30 minutes mm-hmm. and Semi Ojeleye is averaging almost 14, mm-hmm. that means you need more guys. You need right. more bodies.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm simply ridiculing the idea that these Boston Celtics are just like, oh, we can spare Kyrie Irving. We can spare Gordon Hayward. Like, that's right. that's just ridiculous, and it's a horrible notion. By the way, I need to ask you this question because I've been thinking about it a couple days. It's dumb. I'm going to warn you. It's okay. dumb. It's not going to happen, I'm especially excited. Because Brad Stevens has said repeatedly it won't happen. But mm-hmm. let's assume we end up in a Game 7 in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Do you Willis Reed Kyrie Irving for the first two to five minutes?
My God, no. No, 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 no. Not if you ever, no. If no. anything, I would Willis Reed Gordon Hayward. At least he's had, 6 months of recovery? Kyrie went down a month ago.
That. Yeah, you're right. Okay, I like that. Then we switched to Hayward. But look, if Hayward started that game, came in, played like 5 minutes. Oh my God, he would get the entire garden on his, I mean, behind him, the entire intensity would just increase.
I would just instead get Paul Pierce, get him in a wheelchair, and see if I could get like a injury exception. So we can get Paul Pierce in a wheelchair out to take the opening tip.
The reason I'm asking is because I was just, you know, kind of nostalgic, and I was looking at some YouTube videos, some, you know, the old moments like of NBA history, like Jordan's mm-hmm. flu game and Reed. We haven't really had one of those iconic moments in a while where since, it's something...
Since like, the Paul Pierce wheelchair.
That doesn't count. That was so fake. But, I mean, we haven't really had one of those that just, like, big emotional moments where you just go, oh, this is so mesmerizing. We're gonna remember this 20 yeah. years down the road.
Or like Magic starting at center in the 80 finals.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
In the 80 finals where he had 42 points, 15 boards, and 7 assists. I remember that. I've seen that game so many times on YouTube.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I thought it could be cool have something that was just a little bit out of the ordinary.
I don't think Boston. They're not going to
do
that. They definitely should not do that. That would be very right. reckless. But, I mean, I don't think they need a gimmick like that, honestly. Like, I know, you know, now it feels like the series is tied 2-2. Cavs just won two games. LeBron's playing well. The supporting cast is playing well. So now it feels like, oh, Cavs in six for sure. I don't necessarily, you know, it might happen that way. But, like, again, Boston's 9-0 at home. Their supporting cast plays really well at home. They're going to have some days to marinate. Like, Brad Stevens.
LeBron, game seven, dude. Like, you need every gimmick you can get if you're up against LeBron in a game seven.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, I would say we're now entering elimination game LeBron mode. And, like, that's if he's thing. Been playing this well without being in elimination game mode, like, I still remember that 45-point, 15-rebound game against Boston in Game 6 a few years ago. It was, like, just one of the most dominating, terrifying performances I've ever seen from a basketball player. And it was at the Garden, right?
Right.
So,
God damn it, where's Delonte? We need to find Delonte, and we need to find Delonte, like, right now.
No.
Oh, we need to give Delonte like courtside tickets.
Oh my god. Yeah, oh yeah. Then LeBron would break Wilt's record. He would go for 100. Oh man. All right, boy. So I think both of us, after it started 2-0, both of us were leaning toward Boston in this series. Now it's tied 2-2. What's your read on this series moving forward?
Well, I have a new rule I implemented on myself. I'm not going to, you know, predict series that has LeBron James in them.
it's too tiring.
Yeah, it's so frustrating because you don't know. Yeah. Like, look, if you look at the Pacers series as well, like, the Pacers had them.
Yeah.
They had them right there. They outscored them by 40.
Yeah.
They had them. And LeBron happened.
Right. Yeah.
Like, he made that buzzer beater, and after that, like, yeah. Like, that series would have been over if not for LeBron. I'm not going to sit here anymore and go, yeah, I think this and that when it comes to LeBron. I'm out. I'm out of that game. I'm retiring when it comes to LeBron.
That's fair. Because, I mean, compared to Warriors-Rockets, where I think I still lean more heavily toward one side than the other. This one, I'm like, I'm with you. I have no effing clue. Like, I think Boston win game five, and then I would assume we're going to get a monster LeBron performance in game six to send it back to Boston in game seven. And then at that point, it's a game seven. And I don't know what the hell happens, because, you know, weird shit happens in game sevens. So
I'm going to go a little different. I think he has the big performance tonight.
Oh, interesting. And sends it back to Cleveland up 3-2.
I think he's going to go all out tonight and have a huge game, like 50.
Ooh. Oh, man.
And then in game six, which is at home, where you know that Boston struggles a little bit, that's when he'll, I don't want to say coast, but he'll sit back and be a facilitator.
Yeah.
He'll be the running, he'll be the quarterback, and he'll, you know, just let everyone else have their turn. He'll take timely jump shots, timely drives, and then they could get it in six. The thing here is, the big question is, if he has that big game tonight, can Boston have another game up their sleeves where they overcome such a performance? Because he's had one already where Boston came out with a W.
Yep.
The thing is, can they do that twice in one series?
Yeah.
Meaning tonight.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a good ass question, because I don't know.
Right. Nor do I. So it's going to be fun to see either way. And like you, I have no strong conviction in this series either way. I don't really care what happens. Like, at this point, I think whichever team moves on is going to get destroyed in the finals anyway.
Yeah.
So,
like, that's one LeBron prediction I might I might take on. Yeah.
No matter what, whoever emerges from the West is going to be the NBA champion.
Right.
Yeah.
And then after, you know, game three or something, when Cleveland is down like 2-1 and LeBron is starting to heat up, then I'll change my answer again. I don't know.
Right.
Things are just weird.
Yeah.
Things are just weird when he's involved. I could can we actually agree that this Cavs team, this era Cavs team, like since 2014, basically, mm-hmm. just, you know, LeBron part two,
mm-hmm.
is one of the weirdest NBA teams of all time.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Windhorst had a really good article the other day about the organizational fatigue that the Cavs are under, which I think just comes with the scrutiny of LeBron James, comes with, you know, three straight trips to the finals, comes with the double roster overhaul that they've undergone, comes with Kevin Love being in trade rumors for 3 years, you know, Tristan Thompson's off-court stuff that he was dealing with toward the end of the regular season. You know, I think it all just weighs on this team. And, you know, now just the fact that they, like, just so comprehensively overhauled their roster. I mean, again, there's only four guys who have been there, you know, from 2 years ago, which is wild. Like, you wouldn't think that about an NBA champion. Like, the last one that I remember being blown apart this quickly was the 2011 Mavs, I guess. Or I guess, like, you know, even the 2013 Heat, but that's only because LeBron James left and they still had Wade and Bosh for a while.
Or the 90s Bulls. Because that's true. First three-peat was only Mike and Pip.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the only holdovers were Mike and Pip. Every other player was gone when Jordan played baseball. Or in the not even half season he played in 94-95.
Yeah, that's a good point. But overall, I think Windhorst's column, if y'all have not read it yet, go check it out. It was really good. It gave a good inside look at like what the environment is when LeBron James plays for your team for 4 years. And it's something that, you know, we'll talk about his free agency a bunch between now and July 1st, but it's something that his free agent suitors need to consider. Like, this is the end result after 4 years. Mm. And it was like this in Miami and now Cleveland, so...
Oh, wait, J.R. Smith.
Yeah, it was J.R., Tristan, Kevin, and LeBron.
Yeah.
All right, Moit, let's move on now to the Western Conference Finals. And Game 3, Steph, I think it's safe to say that Steph Curry is healthy again. You know, we talked about it after Game 2, like how worried should the Warriors be about Steph, and neither one of us were all that worried. We just figured he's in a slump. He's going to come back home. He's going to do his Roracle thing. Lo and behold, he did his Roracle thing in Game 3, you know, led the Warriors to a 41-point blowout, biggest margin of victory in the playoffs for them, biggest margin of defeat for the Rockets. You know, everyone started writing the Rockets obituary. Game 4, Warriors come out, start the game 12-0. Do you think All It Takes exposed last night, Mort? Did he just stay up till like 6 in the morning retweeting takes from like the middle of the first quarter? Because I just saw so many people, you know, and people I respect, but like Matt Moore of the Action Network jumps to mind immediately. He was, you know, he said something like, not only does this game feel over, but like the series, the season, it's all over. And we're in the middle of the first quarter. And, like, I get it. It's the Warriors. They do these, like, massive runs, and they have four All-Stars, and they have three of the greatest shooters of all time. Like, I understand the avalanche feeling, but the Rockets withstood those punches. The Rockets came back, took a lead going into halftime. James Harden had a virtuoso second quarter. Then the Warriors come back, do their third quarter thing, take a 10-point lead going into the fourth. And, again, the Rockets battle back. I mean, it was just a rock fest at the end of that game. Oh, yeah. Neither team was playing good offense. And Steve Kerr, after the game, said, like, look, we just ran out of gas. They didn't have Andre Iguodala in Game 4. He had a left leg bruise, which is something to monitor moving forward. Klay Thompson also suffered a left knee injury, forced into the locker room briefly in Game 4. He did come back to return, but again, something to monitor because he didn't look... You know, if we're talking about guys on the Warriors who didn't look right as shooters, Klay Thompson did not look right after he came back from that injury. I think he was only he had 10 points on Yeah, 10 points on four of 13 shooting, yeah.
Yeah, he's been a problem since game one. Yeah. I mean, so in game one, he had 28 points on 15 three-point attempts. And ever since, in the three remaining games, or in the three games since, he's had a total of 31 points and taken just 12 threes. So the Rockets are, it's a combination of two things. One, Houston has just found a way to kind of close him out and make him less effective. But I'm going to put some blame on, at the feet of Thompson himself, because here's the thing. Klay doesn't really run around like Reggie or Rip Hamilton. And he should. Because when he has Harden on him, like there's, it's still James Harden. He will get lost on a back screen here and there.
Yeah.
The thing with Klay is he stops running. Like then he just stops up and he waits. That's just it's lazy basketball. I'm just gonna be completely honest. I'm knocking his performance here because he's just not that engaged. Like when he's just standing in the corner, he's observing what KD is doing on top of the key. He's observing what Stephen Curry is doing instead of reacting. Like run around in a half circle, make sure that Kevon Looney or even Sean Livingston is big enough to give some back screen, come out of the other side, pop. There's the shot. And he doesn't utilize that. He needs to run and he needs to get out of transition, seek the corners, and he just needs to be more more aggressive. Now, the injury might affect him, so I'll give him that. But I'm looking at the whole Klay Thompson experience in the Western Conference Finals, and outside of Game 1, it's been pretty abysmal.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, he's shooting under 40% overall. Yeah. Strangely shooting better from three-point range than he is overall. He's 40.7% from three, 39.3% overall. But you know, the Warriors in general are, you know, shooting 36 from three, which like most teams would be perfectly happy with, but they were 39.1 during the regular season. So between, you know, Steph's struggles in the first couple games and even in the first half of game three, and then, you know, Draymond has, he's shooting 11% from 3-point range. He's one of nine. Like, they have not gotten much going in terms of their 3-point shooting outside of their big three, outside of Durant, Curry, and Thompson, all of whom have 10 or more threes in the first four games. Nick Young is 6 of 16. Quinn Cook is 3 of 4. But, like, other than that, they got nothing. Iggy, you know, Iggy has only taken two, but he's 0-2. And we said that going in. Like, the Warriors have these three explosive shooters, and at any point, you know, Steph can go off in these, like, third-quarter rampages. But if one of those three guys is struggling, there's suddenly, that opens the door for the Rockets. Especially, you know, like, Harden played really well offensively in the second quarter, not as well in the third quarter, but then Chris Paul took over. Like, Chris Paul raised their Rockets' margin of error considerably. And people have been ragging on Paul, you know, throughout the series, but, like, man, he came back with a haymaker last night. Gigantic shots in the third and fourth quarter.
It was just his time. He was waiting for it, and I think he read the the criticism going his way. I kind of found it interesting that people were so quick to crap on Chris. Like, this guy's resume deserves a little bit more respect, I feel. I mean, yeah, he hadn't really found his game, but it takes time to integrate oneself into a series, especially one against Golden State, because they're also pretty switchy. They're a great defensive team. Steph is just a nuisance on both sides of the court. I mean, I know that he's not a great individual defender in terms of size, but he is active. Like, he doesn't stop moving, and that goes defensively as well, and that just frustrates the hell out of you at times.
Yeah.
So I get that you need to feel sort of acclimated to the pace of the series that, that the Warriors want to go in. And Chris is feeling stuff out, and last night it just, it worked for him. Like, he found his rhythm, and they came through. What I'm amazed at is Houston is shooting 34%, 34.5% from three this series, and it's 2-2. I mean, that's a huge win in and of itself.
Yeah.
If they have one game where they just go bananas from three, and Lord knows they can, I mean, that's going to be 3-2.
Yeah, right. And now they're going home again where,
going home.
You know, game two, their supporting cast stepped up in a huge way. Ariza, mm-hmm. Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, all of whom, Gordon had 14 points in game four, but on 14 shots. You know, Ariza was only 2-4. Tucker was 0-4. Those guys have been, especially Ariza and Tucker, have been making their impact felt elsewhere. Yep. I mean, Tucker had 16 boards. Both of them had a couple steals, a block each. So defensively, like, you know, they've made their impact. But yeah, if they start providing some complimentary offense, then
yeah,
you're right. Like, it is very well could be 3-2 Houston going back to Golden State for game six.
You know what the big key here is? PJ Tucker's been better than Draymond. I think that's huge, because when you look at matchups, especially going into the series,
mm-hmm.
you kind of just assume, oh, Dre's going to kill this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this and this and that. This guy's a role player. Like, you pigeonhole people.
Mm-hmm.
PJ Tucker, I think, objectively speaking, has been better than Draymond this year. He's been more efficient as a shooter. He's been a damn good rebounder. I think 16 last night? Was it 16?
Yeah, 16 in game four.
And that was with him actually not shooting all that well. I think he was 0-4.
Yeah.
But, like, he's providing several layers that is just helping Houston. Like, he is just, he's been a major key of theirs, and Draymond can't hit anything.
Yeah.
Like, he's been fine as a defender, as a rebounder, as a passer, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can't make an open three, you're a problem.
Yeah, and he also had 5 turnovers alone in game four. He's leading the team with 13 throughout the first
13
four games.
Of 48.
Yeah.
13 of the 48 turnovers Golden State have had in the first four games.
Yep. Not to mention he got blocked by the rim in game four, which looms somewhat large in a 3-point game.
Yeah, that's just a Draymond special, I feel, at this point. It happens once every series, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and James Harden murder dunked on him.
Oh, so. Yeah. That was harsh.
He has to retire now, too. That's a big thing.
So, well, Harden need to do, he had to do something after Sean Livingston made him look like a deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but in Harden's defense, I mean, you know, we rag on him. Everyone rags on him for his defense. He really made some big plays in game four. Like, he in the second quarter especially, he had a couple steals that he poked away, ran it out for a run-out transition opportunity, easy basket. Like, that second quarter swing really took the Golden State crowd out of it going in halftime. Then, of course, the Warriors, you know, do their Warriors thing, explode in the third quarter. But, again, like, the fact that he wasn't, like, he was atrocious defensively throughout parts of the first two games. The fact he, you know, paid more attention and exerted more effort on that side of the court in game four. I think, much like LeBron for the Cavs in game three, I think when your star is doing that, especially a star with the defensive reputation of James Harden, it set the tone for the rest of the team.
Can I ask you a question about that? Do you think it's because Harden is figuring out that superstar calls also work defensively?
It's an interesting theory.
Because, you know, let's be honest, they do. Superstar calls are not just isolated to offensive calls.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the big-time players, they get away with fouls. They make steals that are actually fouls.
Mm-hmm.
And they get away with it. And I think Harden is slowly realizing that he can reach a little bit more, play a little bit more aggressively, you know, with the body.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know. That's... I have nothing to back this up with. I haven't heard anyone talk about it. It's just an observational part on my behalf. Like, it just seems like he's trying to actually figure out how far can I go.
Yeah.
Because he plays extremely locked in right now. I think we mentioned this on one of the previous podcasts. Like, he's extremely locked in. He's all the way dedicated to this thing, and right now I think he's looking at every angle possible, like, how can I gain an advantage?
Yeah.
And if it means that I need to go in and bump some guys off rhythm and poke my hand in there, and maybe I risk getting a foul call, but I'm James Harden, so I might not.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally see him working with that mindset right now.
Yeah, I could too. I mean, I think for all of these guys, they know the playoffs are more physical. The refs are going to let some incidental contact go, whereas they might not in the regular season. So, yeah, I think there's something to the theory of, like, see what I can get away with, test the ref's limit, and then, you know, once I do get that first foul called, then I know that drew the line. But, yeah, I mean, after the game, Mike D'Antoni said that's the best he's ever seen his entire team play defense this year, which I agree with. I mean, if you told me the Rockets were going to hold the Warriors to 92 points, I wouldn't believe you.
Yeah, 12 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the Rockets had a great defense this year. They were the sixth-ranked defense. It's nothing against the Rockets. Like, I know they have a very, not even above average, like, a great defense. But it's still the Warriors, you know? Like, at no point, even in the waning minutes of Game 4, did I feel comfortable. Like, the Rockets had a five-point lead with, like, 2.5 left, and then even a three-point lead in the last minute, it's like, well, the Warriors are going to hit a three and send this thing to overtime. Like, they got – both sides really dodged some bullets. Like, Eric Gordon missed a big three wide open with, like, a minute left that, you know, could have effectively iced the game. I mean, the Warriors, we got to talk about that last possession, or I guess technically second to last because they had that 0.5-second one. But, you know, Steve Kerr afterwards said, he tried to call timeout, and he saw Draymond try to call timeout, and the refs basically ignored him. But B, he's like, otherwise, well, you know, I believe in not calling timeout, letting the guys just run the offense, not letting the defense get set, which I agree with to a point. But, like, I forget, I think it was Haralo Bob on Twitter who said, like, once you saw Klay Thompson running around like he was drowning in chocolate milk, that's probably the time you call timeout. Like, that possession had zero cohesiveness to it.
I felt the last few possessions didn't, honestly.
Yeah.
It was just such a weird game. Like, I saw a lot of people complain about it on Twitter as well. Like, this was one of the best games, and it ended up like that. It was just very, I don't know, kind of disappointing, and like you were hoping for the big finish, and I don't know what to think about it.
Yeah, it felt like game 7 of the 2016 finals, where, like, both teams were just so tired, and they just, you know, again, it was like they were throwing rocks at each other, basically. Like, they had nothing left to give, because, you know, I think there were six players, I want to say, that were over 40 minutes. Like, Dre played 45, KD was 43, Houston had four above the 40-minute mark. Lord. Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't even realized.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Houston had a seven-man rotation in game 4.
Eric Gordon played damn near 35 minutes off the bench.
Right, yeah. And that seven-man rotation included Gerald Green for 12. Like, the Luke Mbamute shoulder injury is looming very, very large right now.
What's his prognosis?
I mean, I think he's healthy. He just has no confidence in the shoulder, so he's such an offensive liability that they just can't play him.
That's a problem.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's just like
Anderson still can't get off the bench.
No, I think he's too much of a defensive liability. Like, you need Tucker and Ariza out there as long as their bodies can hold up. But that's actually, let's go into what's next for them, because that's my first question. If this series goes 7 games, is Houston going to have anything left in the tank?
I mean, you could ask the same thing about the Warriors if that Klay Thompson injury is legit.
Yeah, or Iggy.
Or Iggy, yeah, true.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we've had the issues before with Harden, right? Where he got really fatigued late in the playoffs. So that looms over the whole series as well. Then you add in that Chris Paul is, what, 33? So he's not going to be able to just go nuts. Like, after he's playing, what, 41 minutes? Yeah, no, it's a legitimate question. Like, they need something. They need someone to come off the bench and provide something. Like, the seven-man rotation, I get it. but they need something. I've been vocal about wanting to see Ryan Anderson in there just because I think he can come in and be like the swing guy in a game. Mm-hmm. Comes in, like hits four triples and then leaves again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. They need some spark. I think a lot of it is also, it's probably pretty taxing playing so much isolation basketball.
Yeah.
Like the Rockets are averaging 18 assists.
Right.
That's not a whole lot.
Yeah.
For the series. And that means the ball isn't moving, and it's because of all these switches, you're trying to find the mismatch. I think they would do well in trying to get back to the whole ball movement aspect. Remember game two in Houston,
mm-hmm.
when Chris Paul just started, like, you know, with the ball on a string,
yeah,
started making these beautiful straight line passes and kind of directed, oh yeah, you throw it in the corner, I'm gonna cut here, and now you hit the cutter gets the ball back out for the open three. Like, it was just magical. I think Houston needs to get back to that, and to some extent Golden State needs to do that too, because it frees up Curry that much more when the ball is moving. Mm-hmm. And right now they're just stuck. And I've seen a couple guys on Twitter say that they're kind of nervous about Durant's role in this, because he's pretty isolation heavy. Like, he needs to find his rhythm before he gets his shot off. I'm looking at KD and I'm going, look, the only reason that Golden State is 2-2 right now is because KD went nuts.
Yeah.
Like, you can't really change that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what the next play is. I'm not sure. Like, do you play KD as primarily the screener, and do you go a hell of a lot of pick and pop with him? And then when the defense starts to close out on the 3-point line, then he swings the ball. Like, what does Golden State need to do? That's what I'm more concerned with.
Yeah, it's a fair question, especially we don't know the status for Iguodala for game 5. I mean, going into game 4, he was doubtful Monday, got upgraded to questionable Tuesday. But then Steve Kerr said if he was close, he'd play, which does not seem to bode well for his availability for Game 5. We'll have to see. I mean, Kevon Looney moved into the starting lineup, played relatively well. Didn't give much of an offensive punch, but I wouldn't say he was like a glaring net minus. I mean, he was a -1 on the night.
I was so close on my Jordan Bell prediction.
I know. Well, Jordan Bell did come off the bench. He did get some run, and I think we'll probably see more of that. And maybe that's, you know, if you're looking for some Ryan Anderson minutes, the fact that they have to go with like two semi-conventional bigs, the fact they don't have the Hamptons 5 at their disposal. Maybe you see some Ryan Anderson against one of those guys. But again, I just think Mike D'Antoni knows it's going to be like the Boston series with Clarkson, or when LeBron gets switched on Rozier. They're going to see Ryan Anderson. They're going to get KD switched on him, and it's going to be lights out. Like, I think that they're just going to milk that every single possession until Mike D'Antoni pulls Anderson. So
have I mentioned Ryan Anderson is owed 41.6
million? I know. That's going to be a very fun issue for Houston to navigate this summer. Like, if they're trying to clear cap space to get LeBron or Paul George or whoever, they could do it. I assume Eric Gordon would have some interest around the league just because he's been such a good scorer the last couple of years. He's stayed healthy. I don't know how the hell you get off that Ryan Anderson contract unless you offload some significant assets, which Houston doesn't really have outside of like future draft picks way down the line. So
yeah, and like way down the line.
Yeah, so that's gonna be a nightmare. But it's a fair question on both sides. Where, like, if you're the Golden State, you've just fallen too much into the ISO trap, I think. So you're right; they need to get ball movement going, especially. And I think, you know, not having Iggy contributed to that in game 4, but you're right, like, those last couple of possessions especially were just gross. Like, it's not Warriors basketball. That's not what they have been predicated on, ball movement, as long as Steve Kerr has been their coach. And, you know, I figured we would see more Steph, KD pick and roll, pick and pops with, you know, going into game 4, and I didn't notice a huge increased volume of that. Maybe they're going to keep that, you know, wrapped away for game five, and that could be their difference maker. But yeah, other, like, you can't count on Nick Young. Like, if you're counting on Nick Young to be your X factor, you're going back home down 3-2.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, I think part of it is also with Draymond struggling, teams can play him much like they do Rondo, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because then if you kind of camp out in the lane and Draymond is outside the three-point line and he's, you know, considering taking a shot, like he gets self-confident a lot when he's when his shot is not going down.
Yeah.
And then he starts to, like, look for the pass. But if your defense has moved towards the basket instead and you're trying to close up for the four other guys, that pass is significantly harder to make. Like, Rondo has made an effort because he's smaller and thus more nimble. Like, then he's going to drive the basketball and see what happens. Because as he nears the rim, like, teams will have to come out and adjust because you can't just let Rajon Rondo get a floater on you. Right. So that same, I mean, and I think Draymond needs to take that same approach. Like, okay, if teams are backing off, I need to at least look at the drive and see what opens up when I'm getting like 5 or 7 feet nearer the basket. Like, does the defense rotate onto me from someone else? Does someone else open up? Because he's standing there and he's kind of looking, he's hesitating. And when that shot is not falling, that's just a major concern because you leave him. Like, again, what's his true shooting percentage? 48.9. For this series. That's really bad. And the one of the only things that makes it that much higher than you would think is because he's 11 of 13 from the free throw line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, his effective field goal percentage is 38.9.
Yeah. Worst on the team by far.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, by far.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how this series develops. And so, Mort, just like with the Boston-Cleveland series, I got to ask you, how do you see this unfolding moving forward?
I'm basically where I left it before. I'm rooting for a game 7, and I think we're pretty much there. I have no idea about the winner in this one.
Yeah.
Honestly, I have no idea about the winner from either series. And you know what? That's kind of great. That's a great feeling for a change. Like, you really don't know who's going to come out on top. Whereas in the past few years, it's been like, yeah, Dubs. Yeah, Cavs. Like,
right.
You know it. But this time around, it's a little bit different. And I enjoy it. But if you put a gun to my head, like, we always talk about LeBron going nuclear.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling KD is kind of due.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we talk about KD, and he's great. And he has these games where he finishes with, like, you know, 35, 37, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He has the capability of going out and go, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to go for 50. But he just rarely does it.
Yeah.
And he's mentioned why. Like, he said he's on part of a team where that's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But in this point of the season, with Klay struggling, with Draymond struggling, with Curry, you don't really know if he's healthy or not healthy. Like, he's really hot and cold at this point.
Right.
Like, seriously, KD, just suit up and go for 50. Like,
yeah.
Go for it. I mean, look, he's going to be efficient regardless because that man does not know how to be inefficient.
Right. So, right. Yeah.
I think it's time for KD to take a page out of LeBron's book and just go nuclear.
Yeah. I mean, you know, before the series started, I said Warriors in 6. I expected, basically, the series went as I expected through 3 games. Then I thought the Warriors would win game 4. Houston would not get closed out at home, so they would win game 5. You go back to Golden State, Warriors in 6. After that game, man, I mean, you said it. Like, I want to bottle this feeling up. Because we truly do not know who is going to win either series right now. It very well could be, as you know, as we all expected going into the year, it could be Warriors-Cavs. But if that's the case, like, no one a week from now should be like, oh yeah, this went exactly how we thought the whole time. Like, no, now on whatever, you know, Wednesday, May 23rd, these series feel very much up in the air. Like, I lean Cleveland and I lean Warriors. Actually, I don't even lean Cleveland. I have no effing clue about that Boston-Cleveland series. But I lean the Warriors. I still think Warriors in six is probably the most likely outcome. But it wouldn't at all surprise me if the Rockets ended up winning the series. And frankly, like, I'm just happy the Rockets acquitted themselves after, you know, after that game three blowout. For them to be able to shake it off, shake off that 12-0 start, shake off the third quarter in game four, come back and win that game, that speaks volumes about how good this Rockets team is. Like, I think there were still, even going into this series, there was still a lot of doubt about this Rockets team and how good it was. And then they drop game one, you know, and they're like, ah, it's whatever. Same old Rockets. The Warriors are so good. They get routed in game three. It's like, ah, oh, these Rockets were frauds. No, man. Like, whatever happens in this series from this point forward, the Rockets are really effing good. And if the Warriors didn't exist, they would be the NBA champion favorites right now. Like, they didn't win 65 games by accident. This is one of the best teams, if not the best team, the Warriors have faced in this four-year stretch. So, it, like you, I lean Warriors in six, but God, I hope it's a seven-game series. That would be, oh my God, can you imagine?
That would be epic, yeah. Honestly. And it would also be kind of necessary for Houston, because I was listening to Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they did the Home at Home podcast. Like, Bill was on Lowe's. Yeah, and Lowe was on his. And a question came up on part two, or in part two. Bill said, is this the only year that the Rockets can win it?
Right. Really?
Like, if you imagine, like, this is the roster.
Yeah.
Like, assuming they're not getting LeBron James this summer.
Right.
I think, I don't agree with Bill often.
Yeah.
I really don't. Yeah. But this time around, I'm kind of thinking about it.
Right. Yeah.
I really am. Because Chris is not getting any younger.
Yeah.
PJ Tucker is, what, 32?
Yeah.
And then 32, I think.
Ariza is a free agent this summer.
Ariza, you need to Capella.
Yep.
And, you know, Eric Gordon is getting older as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that, this might be, you know, your one shot.
Yeah.
Your one shot at getting that damn ring.
Right. Like, Iggy's banged up. And if you
do it, Iggy's banged up. Like, right. All these things are just matching up perfectly. Clay can't hit anything. Raymond can't hit anything. Like, if they win the ring this year, like, it'll all be worth it. Like, the committed salary down the road, you know, forget about it because you want a ring. And a ring against the Warriors. Like, that's everything.
Yeah.
And assuming, like, LeBron, obviously. Like, you still need to play
that. Right. There's that detail.
But there's a slight detail. Going up against the second greatest player in history. Yeah, that's a minor thing. Minor inconvenience. No, but, like, he had a point. Like, that's partly why there's a part of me that's sort of rooting for Houston, just because this is like the final flight they might have in them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, the Dubs, they have two rings so far.
Yep.
They're going to come back to the finals next year and the year after. I mean, they're going to be a dynasty.
Yeah.
So I think it could be fun to just see the Rockets in the finals against Boston just for the hell of it.
Oh,
because,
man,
I think that could be a fun series. I mean, Yeah.
But
it's interesting to think, like, down the line, where the Rockets are. Like, if LeBron joins them, then forget about everything I just said, obviously.
Right. No, that's why I'm rooting for the Rockets to win. Because if they win the title, LeBron can't join them. Like, he just... You cannot justify, like, narrative...
Oh, yeah, you can.
Narrative-wise.
No, he doesn't care. He's above narrative, dude.
No,
yeah,
I don't think he would join a team that just won a championship.
I don't think he cares anymore. He went through that entire thing in Miami. I think he doesn't give a flying mother fudge.
It's possible, but I
don't think he cares.
I think if they lost, it's more conceivable than if they win.
You just wrote an article saying LeBron was all, you know, he should be all about them rings right now.
He should be. But if he goes to a team that just won a ring, then he's going to look like even more of a front runner than KD did in 2016.
Who cares?
KD does. Like, 2 years into it. Like,
He has burner accounts. Last time I checked, LeBron didn't have burner accounts. You're talking about one of the, you know, I love KD, but he's one of the softest people, like personalities in the NBA.
But Bron went through that too. Like, we're forgetting that 2010-11 Bron was like just as moody and dour as KD is right now. The difference is that he got over it when he won that ring that second year in Miami. And, like, KD has won a ring already, and he's now in his second year, finishing up his second year, and it still seems like, you know, based on the blog boy's comment and everything, like, he still seems to be...
He's sour. Yeah. He's always going to be sour. Like, he's... Look, I don't think LeBron... I think LeBron is just... He's so global now.
Yeah.
That he don't give a damn. I think he doesn't give a flying fuck about what teams or fans or players, whatever they're saying. Like, it's not an issue. Like, he's LeBron James.
It's possible.
Like, remember when he said at that press conference when he was in Miami, like, I'm still gonna live my life, and when I wake up in the morning, you'll live yours, or whatever.
Right.
Like, you know. Yeah. So and you know, who can point fingers to that, because that's true. He's going to wake up in a mansion, and we're most certainly not. So I don't think he cares one bit.
We're going to have to debate that one at a later time. Because, I do have some takes. And, yes, as you referenced, I did my column this week for Give Me Sport was all about LeBron just needing to leave Cleveland in general. Because, you know, statistically, he's going to surpass Michael Jordan very soon if he hasn't already. So the only thing...
Oh, statistically?
Yeah. Like,
he's done that. Like, if you look at it from a strictly statistical standpoint, LeBron is GOAT.
Right. Outside, like, Jordan still leads him in regular season points by like 12 or 1300, something like that. But Bron's going to pass him next year, and it's like
LeBron is going to end up with a career like 35,000 points, 10,000 boards, 10,000 assists. Or something. Like, statistically speaking, LeBron is going to be the greatest of all time. What you're talking about is, you know, the competitive things such as rings, and you're talking about the narrative, because the narrative is always going to play a part in this thing.
Right.
And, I mean, look, I think the biggest thing with Mike was him sitting out for 18 months.
Yeah.
And coming back and winning another three-peat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's... I think that's what did it.
Yeah. No, like, absolutely.
That's just... I can't even comprehend. Like, if you could imagine... Could you imagine the media if a guy did that now?
Like, yeah, LeBron, like... Right.
Removed himself from the game for 18 months, came back, and won three titles in a row. Like, Twitter would be insane.
Look at how people have fallen all over themselves this year when Kawhi, like, this whole mystery Kawhi situation. Yeah, now, if a player like Kawhi Leonard then just is like, nope, I'm going to leave the NBA for 18 months.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, you're right.
So narrative plays a factor. And I think maybe we should just look at it as... There are GOATs and eras.
Yeah.
Like, maybe we should just split it up. Yeah, I mean, because that might be the best way to do it. Like, I think it's such a shame that Bill Russell is getting crapped on, because he was so great. He was so dominant, but he just played in an era where, like, if you put prime Shaq into that era, Bill Russell would be like, who?
Yeah. And Kareem, too. Like, I like the GOAT idea per era, because then you could have, like... You got Wilt and Bill Russell early. You got to have Kareem and Oscar Robertson. You can have Magic and Bird. You can have MJ. I'm leaving Kobe out. You could have Tim Duncan. You could have LeBron.
You should have, like, with 20 years intervals. Like, you should have from 1980 to 2000, and then, you know, if you go backwards from this 1960 to 1980, and then from 1940 to 1960 or something like that. Because I think 10 years is too short.
Right.
Like, the game doesn't change enough, but 20 years? Hell yeah, it does.
I like it. Let's submit it to the Basketball Hall of Fame.
I don't think they will take my phone call, honestly. Probably not. This is a Dane.
All right, Moore. That's a good place to wrap up. We will have plenty more LeBron James legacy discussion and free agent discussion in the coming months, because soon we're not going to have anything better to do. But until then, follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. We're still going to keep pumping out good stuff. We'll have a conference finals recap in a couple days, and as well as an NBA finals preview. We'll do the Bye Felicias for whichever two teams get knocked out. So Follow us at the NBA Pod for all of that. You can also find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort. Enjoy the rest of the conference finals.
I will, Brian. Thank you. You too. And, you know, we're both going to be a lot better than Carl Anthony Towns these days, which we really need to touch on in the next pod.
Yeah, we'll also be doing a off-season brouhaha pod coming up soon as well, and we'll touch on
Towns for first pick.
Yeah.
I'm calling it.
Yeah. Well, get excited for that as well.